Korea, what's universal time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. Pope Francis continues his U.S. visit in New York. Shortly after his arrival Thursday afternoon from Washington, Pope Francis led an evening prayer service at New York's St. Patrick's Cathedral. The Pope is scheduled to address world leaders at the U.N. General Assembly on Friday. Among a list of planned events, he'll be joining in a multi-faith service at a memorial site built at the location of the former World Trade Center. The Pope is scheduled to leave Saturday morning for 2 days in Philadelphia, his final U.S. stop. More than 700 people were killed and 800 injured during a stampede on the outskirts of the holy city of Mecca in Saudi Arabia. That stampede occurred along a route leading to a ritual stoning of the devil. Edward Uranian reports.
Amateur video showed a crowd of hundreds of pilgrims being bowled over and crushed in a stampede on a narrow road alongside rows of tents housing visitors to the annual Hajj. Health Minister Khalid Fala told journalists the stampede occurred when pilgrims tried to go against the crowd along a narrow road, ignoring time restrictions for movement in each direction. He vowed that a quick investigation would take place to assess what happened. Edward Uranian, Cairo.
U.S.-based rights organization Human Rights Watch says Rwandan authorities are unlawfully holding some of the country's most vulnerable citizens in an unofficial detention center located in the capital of Kigali. The organization released a report on Thursday. It details accounts from people who had been interned between 2011 and 2015. This is VOA News. Two suicide bombers attacked a mosque in Yemen's capital Thursday, killing at least 25 people attending prayers at the start of the Eid al-Adha holiday. The blast in Sana'a had a mosque run by the Shiite Houthi group that seized control of the city a year ago. There's been no claim of responsibility. China's President Xi Jinping arrived in Washington Thursday for a state visit and talks with President Barack Obama, expected to cover differences over alleged Chinese cyber spying, Beijing's economic policies, and territorial disputes in the South China Sea. The two held a private dinner Thursday night and will hold meetings Friday. The White House says Ukraine will be at the top of President Obama's agenda when he meets with Russian President Vladimir Putin in New York. The Kremlin says the meeting is set for Monday when the UN General Assembly opens. Here's White House spokesman Josh Earnest.
President Putin requested the meeting, and I think at this point, considering the significant concerns that I've just raised, I think it makes sense for President Obama to sit down with his counterpart and see if he can get some greater clarity about Russia's intentions inside of Ukraine.
White House spokesman Josh Earnest. Syrian warplanes are reportedly carrying out airstrikes on Islamic State militants using newly arrived Russian aircraft. Local sources say the strikes have taken place in the northern part of the country. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan criticized Washington over its support of Syrian Kurdish fighters of the People's Protection Units. Dorian Jones has more.
Ankara and Washington could be on a collision course over the Syrian Kurdish militia, the YPG. U.S. State Department spokesperson John Kirby praised the YPG earlier this week, saying it has a proven track record in fighting the Islamic State and that the United States will continue to work with the group. President Erdogan on Thursday slammed the comments.
Bu yanlış.
He said he believes the U.S. will reevaluate what he called this wrong view. Erdogan said Turkey sees the Islamic State as a terrorist organization. Dorian Jones, Istanbul.
The European Union's Mediterranean naval operation will begin the second phase of an operation against migrant traffickers October 7th. The EU Foreign Affairs Chief Federica Mogherini announced a decision in Rome saying that European warships will operate against traffickers in international waters. They will not enter into Libyan territory. Colombia's chief negotiator Humberto de la Calle says both sides will definitely meet a deadline next March for a peace agreement between the government and FARC rebels. The government and rebels reached a major breakthrough in peace talks on Wednesday, which aims to end more than 50 years of bloodshed. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Friday, September 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda's opposition coalition has failed to choose a single candidate to challenge President Museveni in next year's election.
The truth is, we have reached a fork in the road, and each group has chosen a different path. We hope the destination is the same because the goal of the alliance unite democratic forces and win in 2016.
Mal Norbert is the president of the opposition Democratic Party and a supporter of former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi. Calm is returning to Burkina Faso after a week-long political crisis. Human rights groups urge the African Union to set up a hybrid court for South Sudan, and Rwanda denies it unlawfully imprisons its own citizens to keep Kigali clean.
To suggest Rwanda's poor people, Kigali's poor people, are kept away in order to keep the city clean is obscene, is preposterous. We keep our city clean because we pay people to clean it.
Johnston Businge is Rwanda's justice minister. Pope Francis addresses the UN General Assembly today, Friday, after another busy day yesterday in Washington. And Europe pledges more than $1 billion in aid to refugees. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In Uganda, the Opposition Democratic Alliance, the TDA, has failed to choose a single candidate to challenge President Yoweri Museveni in the 2016 presidential election. The two main candidates were Dr. Chisa Besigye of the Forum for Democratic Change and former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi of the Go Forward team. Mao Norbert is president of the Opposition Democratic Party and a supporter of Mr. Mbabazi's candidacy. He says the alliance could not reach a consensus because Dr. Besigye has not conceded, even though 7 out of the 9 entities that make up the alliance support Mr. Mbabazi. On the other hand, Dr. Besigye's supporters believe he should be the alliance's candidate because he has the most popular appeal in the country. Norbert says Besigye and Mbabazi will address the Ugandan people today, Friday, at separate news conferences.
We have not been able to reach a consensus because for us, a consensus means those who dissent declare that they can live with the majority position. In fact, out of the 9 entities, in TDA, you can say 7 have chosen to support Honorable Mbabazi. Now, we can reveal to the people, which indeed we did last night, that the majority view was put to the House and the dissenters could not make a concession. And so they failed our very high standard of decision-making by consensus.
So where does the alliance go from here?
What I expect is that the alliance will continue with or without the dissenters. At the same time, the dissenters who have coalesced around Colonel Kizza Besigye, who has been running in the presidential race since 2001, they will make their own strategy. The team that is for Amama Mbabazi will also make its own strategy. We will discuss whether we can agree on how to cooperate. But the truth is, we have reached a fork in the road, and each group has chosen a different path. We hope the destination is the same because the goal of the alliance is to unite democratic forces and win in 2016. And I believe we have a real chance.
As you mentioned, Dr. Chisa Besigye has run for the president 3 times. So how did the alliance come up with selecting the former prime minister, Mr. Mbabazi, over Dr. Besigye? Who is the most popular candidate to defeat President Museveni?
The most likely challenger who can oust Museveni is Amama Mbabazi because, first and foremost, I think being a newcomer to the opposition, he brings the most recent information about Musevenism, the man, the machine, and the mindset. Secondly, I do believe sincerely that the public respects novelty. In every society, people respect something new, they gravitate around it, especially when the old has not made a lot of traction. I mean, Colonel Besigye's vote share has been declining. We can talk about rigging and so on. Opinion polls have been more in favor of Mbabazi. So Colonel Besigye can talk about change, but I think Honorable Mbabazi can cause that change.
Is what is happening right now in Uganda a recipe to re-elect Mr. Museveni?
Obviously, Mr. Museveni is also capable of fishing in troubled waters, so he's definitely undermining the opposition unity through negative propaganda and pressure on some of the vulnerable members of our teams. So we should not give him the opportunity. And the answer to that is unity. We have to unite. We cannot afford to be in disarray.
Maud Nobert is president of the opposition Democratic Party and a supporter of former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi's candidacy for the opposition alliance. You're speaking with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Life is getting back to normal in Burkina Faso as the country recovers from a week-long political crisis provoked by a coup that was reversed on Wednesday. Emily Yop reports for VOA from Ouagadougou.
Army tanks and policemen are less visible in the streets of Ouagadougou a day after coup leaders from the presidential guard handed power back to the transitional civilian government. Some banks are open for the first time in days, as are shops in the market.
C'était difficile parce que nous sommes au marché ici.
Resident Kafanda Haruna say it was difficult during the crisis. Here in the market, he says it was difficult to find food. We suffered a lot, he says. Most petrol stations are still closed but are due to reopen Friday. Fuel shortages led street vendors to increase gas prices by 50% this week. The main city square is still blocked off. Some Muslims wishing to celebrate Eid al-Adha Thursday had to go to the municipal stadium to pray. Worshipper Daouda Birba says he is very happy that President Michel Kafando got his job back. This past week, he says, we didn't work and we couldn't go out because of the crisis. But in the next few days, God willing, he says, all services will open again and there won't be any problem. Coup leader General Gilbert Diendéré say he regrets the coup. The week of unrest killed at least 10 people. Diendéré stepped aside Wednesday and the Presidential Guard, or RSP, agreed to remain in their barracks. Out for Eid prayers Thursday, Amadou Traoré say he is not ready to forgive and forget.
C'est pas suffisant. Les peuples veulent la dissolution de RSP.
He says it's not enough that the RSP have put down their weapons. He says people want the RSP to be disbanded. We do not want to hear about them anymore, he says, because they killed their brothers. The government has not said what he plans to do about the RSP or election that were planned for October 11th but are now postponed. Emily Yop from UN News in Ouagadougou.
Rwanda's justice minister has described as obscene and preposterous a report by Human Rights Watch accusing the government of unlawfully holding some of its most vulnerable citizens in an unofficial detention center in the capital, Kigali. Johnston Businge said all detention facilities in Rwanda are run in accordance with the United Nations standards and Rwandan laws. In a report released Thursday, Human Rights Watch detailed accounts from people who it said had been interned at Gikondo Transit Center between 2011 and 2015. The organization said its staff interviewed 57 former detainees who had been interned as a means of keeping undesirable elements off the streets of Kigali. Justice Minister Businge said Human Rights Watch has chosen to deliberately mislead people with false statements.
Human Rights Watch has accused my government for many things. Human Rights Watch opposed the church, opposed land consolidation, opposed trying to get citizens into iron-roofed houses. It has opposed a number of things which have contributed to the Human Development Index in this country. So it does not surprise me. What they put out today is a complete invention of their own. It is twisting the truth to fit some pattern that I'm yet to understand. To suggest Rwanda poor people, or Kigali poor people, are kept away in order to keep the city clean is obscene, is preposterous. We keep our city clean because we pay people to clean it, because we keep our lights on, because we keep our pumps lit, because we keep our zebra crossings lit, because we plant grass and plant trees and do our hedges and do walkways for pedestrians and do humps and, you know, get houses given a facelift periodically. So How do human beings become part of a dirty city? I just don't understand.
Does the government of Rwanda have detention centers?
We do not run detention centers that are not in our laws, that are not run under United Nations minimum standards for detention centers. We do not do that. What we do have is a series of rehabilitation centers that are in Kigali, in the east, in the north, in the west, at a place called Iwawa, in the Lake Kivu, where we attempt to rehabilitate unfortunate youth in our society who unfortunately end up in drugs or other forms of delinquency, in petty crime, in prostitution. For the last couple of years, we have more than 7,000 post-delinquency rehabilitation graduates who are very proud fellows now running their own lives as carpenters, as tailors, as welders, and all sorts of other skills which are making a huge difference in their lives. And this is what Human Rights Watch has consistently referred to as detention centers.
Mr. Minister, the allegation by Human Rights Watch is that the people at these centers are being ill-treated, including beating. The beatings are commonplace. Is that a fact?
That is not fact. And indeed, this is the trademark of Human Rights Watch. They will always depend on anonymous sources. They will never cite evidence. If the police in Rwanda beat up someone, can Human Rights point out something? Can we get evidence that someone is beaten up?
Justin Businge is Rwanda's justice minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kigali. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, September 25th. Let's give a shout out to listeners on our affiliate station, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, and Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu in Kenya. Daybreak Africa time is 17 and a half minutes past the hour. Pope Francis is expected to address the United Nations General Assembly later today, Friday, in New York. Yesterday, Thursday, the pontiff spoke to a joint session of the U.S. Congress, urging lawmakers to work for the common good. Marcus Harton reports from Washington.
Mr. Speaker, the Pope of the Holy See.
Pope Francis addressed a joint meeting of Congress inside the U.S. Capitol. He urged cooperation, championed the cause of immigrants, lamented the world's trouble spots, and praised the ability of the United States to make progress.
And I am happy that America continues to be, for many, a land of dreams.
Leaders of opposing political parties united in praise of the Pope's message.
I know I speak for the entire Senate when I say it was a privilege to welcome the Pope to the Capitol this morning.
I admire the conviction and heart of His Holiness because it brings every effort that we do, I think, to the forefront of what we try to do to live up to what he suggests we should do.
Buenos dias. Hello, everyone.
The pontiff made brief remarks and offered a prayer for thousands who gathered on the National Mall. He then visited a Washington church that served lunch to several hundred of the city's homeless.
El Hijo de Dios,
the Son of God, came into this world as a homeless person. The Son of God knew what it was to be a homeless person.
Then it was on to New York, aboard a chartered airliner with the temporary call sign, Shepherd One. Upon arrival, Pope Francis led evening prayers at St. Patrick's Cathedral. Marcus Harton, VOA News, Washington.
Human rights groups are calling on the African Union Peace and Security Council to set up a hybrid court for South Sudan. They are also calling on the African Union to finally make public a report about crimes committed during South Sudan's 20-month conflict. Charlton Doki of VOA South Sudan in Focus program reports from Juba.
In a letter sent to AU chairperson Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, South Sudanese and international rights groups are calling on the continental body to use a special meeting on South Sudan that's due to be held on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly debate to press for the establishment of the proposed court. Sky Wheeler, a researcher with Human Rights Watch, says rights groups are happy to see that the peace deal for South Sudan included a clause calling for a hybrid court to be set up to try those charged with crimes committed during South Sudan's conflict. The peace agreement says the independent court would be established by the African Union Commission and would investigate and try individuals accused of committing crimes during South Sudan's 20-month conflict.
But it's really important that this court get established as soon as possible so that investigations can begin into what the crimes that have been committed over the past years during this terrible conflict can be investigated, and then those who are responsible prosecuted for these crimes.
The peace deal says most of the judges on the proposed court will come from other African countries, not South Sudan. The court will have jurisdiction over crimes, including genocide and crimes against humanity. Wheeler says it's important that the African Union ensure that investigations into crimes committed during the conflict start soon. Otherwise, she warns, momentum will be lost. In their letter to Zuma, the rights groups are also calling on the AU to publish the report on the Commission of Inquiry in South Sudan. The report was supposed to be made public at an AU summit in January. Wheeler says South Sudanese have waited for too long for the report to be released.
The report is very important. It will really provide information about what happened. It will be an important stimulant for accountability, we hope, for some of the atrocity crimes that have been committed in this conflict.
The contents of the report were shared with the government delegation by the AU Commission at Peace Talks in June, but its contents have not been released to the public. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
European leaders have pledged more than $1 billion to help Syrian refugees in the Middle East in an attempt to stop the flow of migrants arriving on the continent's southern shores. But as Henry Ritual reports from London, big differences remain over what to do with the migrants who have already arrived.
In the early fall rain on the border between Croatia and Serbia, Idris Bezic, a local imam, leads prayers for the Muslim festival of Eid for thousands of refugees and migrants. He describes the dangers of the migrants' path through the Balkans. He says the worst thing is that a lot of families are missing members. They are missing children, wives, brothers. The situation is terrible. European leaders are scrambling to find a way to stem this flow. After an emergency meeting Wednesday, the EU pledged $1.1 billion for the United Nations and other aid agencies to help Syrians in the Middle East. Leaders also agreed on closer cooperation and tighter border controls. Donald Tusk is European Council President.
It is clear that the greatest tide of refugees and migrants is yet to come. Therefore, we need to correct the policy of open doors and windows.
Some EU states have accused Germany of stoking the crisis by offering to accept hundreds of thousands of refugees. Speaking to the German parliament Thursday, Chancellor Angela Merkel took a tougher line.
Ebenso gehört dazu eine effektive Rückführung derjenigen, die keinen Anspruch auf Schutz in der Europäischen Union haben.
Chancellor Merkel said what Europe needs is the effective repatriation of those people who are not entitled to protection in the European Union. She called on Europe's allies to help tackle the conflicts that are the root cause of the crisis.
Sie kann nur gemeinsam mit unseren transatlantischen Partnern, den Vereinigten Staaten von Amerika.
Chancellor Merkel said that can only happen with the support of our transatlantic partners, the United States, as well as with Russia and the states of the region of the Middle East. A plan to redistribute 120,000 refugees across member states is facing a legal challenge from Slovakia. Up to 1 million asylum seekers are expected to reach Germany alone this year. Andrei Mihajlovic is spokesperson for the UN Refugee Agency, the UNHCR.
It is primarily a refugee crisis, not a migrant one. The vast majority of those who are coming across the Mediterranean, especially this year, are Syrians, Afghans. Iraq is 80% of all arrivals to Europe this year are coming from the refugee-producing countries.
Refugee groups warn that Europe is far from agreeing a long-term solution, as deep divisions between member states still remain. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
It's 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Marco Omar in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with rugby. Namibia put up a brave fight before going down 58-14 to world champions New Zealand at the Rugby World Cup in London in England on Thursday. The result consigns Namibia to the bottom of Group C with no point, while New Zealand has 9 points after two games. Meanwhile, South Africa seek to get their World Cup campaign back on track when they play Samoa in Birmingham tomorrow, Saturday. South Africa, who is seeded in Group B, suffered a shock 34-32 defeat against Japan last Sunday and desperately need a win against Samoa to lift them from the fourth place in the group with just 2 points. In athletics, Kenya's London Marathon champion Eliud Kipchoge lines up for the Berlin Marathon in the German capital on Sunday, aiming to improve his personal best of 2 hours, 4 minutes and 5 seconds he ran on this course in 2013. Although a strong favorite to win the race, Kipchoge faces a two-pronged challenge from his compatriots Geoffrey Mutai and Emmanuel Mutai, who have personal bests that are less than 16 seconds shy of the world record. The intensity of the competition could see any three better Kenya's Dennis Kimeto's world record of 2 hours, 2 minutes and 57 seconds ran on this course last year. In cycling, the Tour of Côte d'Ivoire, which is also known as Tour of Reconciliation on the UCI Africa Cycling Circuit, gets underway on Sunday in Dabakala in north-central Ivory Coast. Cyclists will ride over 6 stages, finishing some 180 kilometers away in the capital Yamoussoukro next Friday. In football, South Africa's Orlando Pirates host Egyptian defending champions El Ahly in Soweto in the opening leg of the Orange Africa Confederations Cup tomorrow, Saturday. On Sunday, Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel welcomed Egypt's Zamalek in Sousse in the other semi-final. Elsewhere, Sudan's El Merrekh hosts the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe in the first leg of the Orange Africa Champions League semi-final in Khartoum tomorrow, Saturday. On Sunday, Sudan's El Hilal are at home to Algeria's USM Algiers in Omdurman in the other semi-final. Finally, the winner of the Orange Africa Champions League play in the FIFA Club World Cup due from the 10th to the 20th of December in Yokohama and Osaka, Japan. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Rwanda's justice minister has described as obscene and preposterous a report by Human Rights Watch accusing the government of unlawfully holding some of its most vulnerable citizens in an official detention center in the capital, Kigali. Johnston Businge said all detention facilities in Rwanda are run in accordance with United Nations standards and Rwandan laws. That is it for this Friday, September 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Strarak, as well as post editor Mark Oman, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a lovely weekend, Africa.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, we'll come to you live from New York, where world leaders are gathering for the United Nations General Assembly. They will address a variety of global concerns, including the European migrants crisis, climate change, and this year's UNGA theme, the UN at 70, a new commitment to action. Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on Straight Talk Africa. Next on Let's Talk, punctuality. Does it matter to you? Does it affect your views about someone when you meet to do business? Join host Sande Shomari and his guests discussing punctuality. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.